What's up, my friend? Welcome to the Finding Direction podcast. My name is Stu Massengill, and I'm here every single week to bring you a passionate guest or message dedicated to helping you find your purpose so that you can live a life full of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for hanging out with me, and let's dive in. What's up, my friend? Welcome back to another episode here on Finding Direction. As always, I am so grateful to have you here on today's episode on any time you join us on this podcast. And I am extraordinarily excited for you to dive into this week's episode because I'm sitting down with Susie Moore, who you will feel her energy. She is just a beautiful ball of beautiful energy. And you will feel it on this episode. To give you a little bit of her background, Susie Moore, she is a former Silicon Valley VP who has turned into a life and a business coach who helps people find their passion, start their side hustle, and make an impact while living life confidently. She is the author of best-selling books, What If It Does Work Out? Stop Checking Your Likes and Let It Be Easy. And she's also been featured in Forbes, The Today Show, The Huffington Post, just to name a few. And on this episode, a few things you can expect is we dive into one question that if you start asking yourself will literally flip your world upside down in the most beautiful way possible. We talk about how she landed herself a $500,000 a year VP role with just a high school diploma. We talk about why she decided to leave that cushiony, comfy salary to pursue her true dream life. We talk about the true definition of confidence, how to get more of it, and so much more goodness on this episode. You, I promise, are going to enjoy this one. So if you have not yet, make sure you hit the subscribe button so you can join us every single week on this show. And without further ado, here we go. Susie Moore, welcome to the show.
Oh, Stu, I'm so happy to be here with you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm equally as excited to have you here. And I'd love it as we kick this thing off. If you could give our listener just a little bit of background as far as who are you, what do you do, and fill them in on a little bit of Susie.
Well, I mean, I'll keep this succinct because we can go in lots of directions here, Stu. But I've been working as a life coach, self-help author, and advice columnist full-time for a decade now. And I am obsessed with helping people get what it is that they really, really want by uncovering and removing these invisible but very real blocks that we all have. And I started my life coaching business as a side hustle when I was working in the tech sector in my 20s. And I just knew that I wanted to kind of go big with my message, speak a lot about my personal story. And really, you know, after being, you know, a self-help junkie since the age of 15, doing this work for me feels like such a joy. But in my 20s, I've written about this. I've always been the breadwinner of my marriage. I was earning $500,000 at the age of 30, working in the Silicon Valley world. And it wasn't an easy shift or transition. I remember feeling scared. I remember feeling guilt around kind of going towards my life path and my life purpose, definitely having no clue whether or not it would work out. But making that switch for me early in life, I think has probably been the best decision I've ever made. Because, Stu, I really believe that we're all here to make a very specific contribution, and we know at our core what that contribution is.
I love it. Such a beautiful, beautifully said. And if we dive into your life and we go back to like the early stages of your life, you know, you said that the last decade has been, it's like a second chapter, you could say, right, of your life that you've had that's been significantly different from the first one. And I would love to dive into sort of the first chapter-ish, you know, there's many chapters, but the first part of your life and kind of hear from you, like when you grew up, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do, and how did you ultimately end up, you know, being in this sort of Silicon Valley, being director of sales? And I mean, you were making a massive footprint in that industry.
Yes. Well, you know, when I grew up, I had a lot of instability. We moved around a lot, including living in domestic violence shelters, me, my mom, and my sister. I went to lots of different schools. When I was a kid, I remember at that early stage that even though I will always love and respect my parents, where everyone is doing their best, this I know to be true, I knew that that was not going to be my life. I knew that I had big dreams. I didn't have words for it back then, but I remember thinking that if there was going to be a life that I wanted to live, that I had to really be responsible for that. I knew that it would be my my responsibility to create it. And so being young, I had the gift of an early struggle. And I think we all have different struggles in different ways. Yeah. Some people have academic struggles. Some people have health struggles. Some people have family struggles like I did. But whatever struggles I think that we have early in our life, I think they can really be a launching pad to create very deep desires. And I knew that when I was younger, all I wanted really was to have a nice home, to be in a healthy relationship that was stable, and to frankly make enough money to take care of my mom. That was my goal. And I was able to do that. And so working hard, getting started in my career early, moving to New York in my early 20s with my now husband, I worked really hard to create that. I was like, okay, what can I do? Like, what's happening? Where are really the opportunities? And it was absolutely in tech. And so even without any formal qualifications or college degree, I found myself networking well, really leaning into my strengths, knowing or really leaning into the belief that anything is possible and just going for it. I mean, I know from studying self-help for so long that successful people have a real bias toward action. So taking a lot of action, practicing my confidence, stretching my willingness to be uncomfortable, and just kind of also, frankly, not taking it all so seriously. I think that's a real superpower, not being so serious about everything that even goes wrong or challenges that come up or problems that you have to face, because we all do. Kind of rolling with it and having a lighter attitude over time allowed me, I think, just to take the steps required to set up the career that I wanted until I knew I was just really ready for something else. And let me tell you, having a corporate career is an incredible training ground for having a business. So if anyone is listening and they're thinking, I don't like my job as a lawyer, or I don't like my job as a, I don't know, say you're in tech like I was, you're still learning a lot of skills that are extremely transferable. And you're also working in an environment that requires a pretty strong work ethic, which carries so well to entrepreneurship if that's of interest to you. But I remember thinking in my 20s, Stu, that, gosh, I'm wasting my time here. I don't want to do this. I want to help people. I want to, you know, like essentially what I do now. But I also realized that I needed that experience. I needed to go through that kind of maturation phase and meet people and even have the career experience to be the coach that I am now to different career professionals. So I would say no experience is wasted. And the path that you're on, there are many ways that you can go. And success and failure are the same road, however you define them. Success is just farther down that road. So we just have to keep going, like keep on swimming. keep going wherever you are.
I love it. And I think one thing that's just so interesting to hear you point out as you talk about the kind of early stages of your life.
Yes.
Is you use the word gift, right? You're like, I went through these struggles and it was a gift. And I think a lot of people go through struggles and they don't say, man, that was a gift in my life. And I think it's just a beautiful nugget that anyone listening to this can take and say, okay, if I went through a struggle, am I looking at it as it like, man, life is against me? Or am I looking at it as like, what's the gift that I could take from that? Because it's like, you've created such a beautiful life from a very difficult situation that you grew up in. And it's because many things, but one of them being that you looked at it as a gift of like, this isn't the life that I'm going to pick for myself. So I just want to point that out. And I'm curious, to dive into like a little bit of the tactics. So you mentioned it, right? No college degree, just a high school background. And you get into this world and become extremely successful. So what were some of the, you know, you said you had this attitude of just like, just go for it, just take action. What were some of the key maybe actions that you remember taking back in the day that you go, man, it was those few things that I did that really like helped me get to where I was?
A few things. First of all, I think that you have to learn a bit about your personality. So becoming self-aware. I think that sometimes we don't even realize how we come across to other people. So for example, I used to sometimes be moody, like thinking that was like kind of cute or funny. And so being aware of my personality, just how I'm being perceived, how other people receive me was critical. So I loved reading books like The Magic of Thinking Big, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I mean, it's endless, the books that I studied that really got me in touch with the core of myself and allowed me to present myself in a bit of more of a pleasing way, frankly, to the world. Yeah. And I know that one of the lessons that I learned from my various books and research is, you know, it's not really, it's not very appealing. Like negativity repels, no matter what the situation. Amen. So, yeah, so for example, like even if you're at the airport and say there's a flight delay announcement, right? No one's thrilled about that, but it happens. If someone freaks out and you see them at the gate and they're really angry, even though they're not freaking out at you because you're strangers, you don't know that person, no one's thinking, I want to sit next to that person on the plane. Yeah. Right? So yeah. I knew that by leaning into my natural optimism, doing my daily work so I could come to a calm, steady place before going out into the world, taking care of myself so that I'm rested, so that I'm in a good mood, primarily that's the foundation for many blessings. Also, networking, being able to connect with others, not being afraid to be rejected, being willing to be uncomfortable, being willing to have people say no to me or shut me down, that is absolutely okay with me. And I'm talking 100% at this stage. Like my bounce back ability set is like 2 or 3 seconds. I can bounce back from disappointments. So, and I think, you know, number three, it really is just having this understanding of, you know, Why are we here? I mean, we're not here to get through life unscathed. We're not here to struggle, to suffer. I mean, that's part of anyone's life experience. But I believe that the core purpose of our life is to enjoy it. And so if I'm having a good time, if I'm listening to myself and taking care of myself and putting myself out there in ways that feel good and natural, then I think that a lot of good things can also find me.
I love it. Yeah, you can just tell from just the aura that you put off that it's like, that is such a key value of who you are. It's like, you just enjoy this life. Like, and I would say I'm guilty sometimes of taking it too seriously. So that's a nugget I'm going to take from you today is just practice enjoying and having fun. And it's like, I mean, that's a huge part of what life's about, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, even in one of my favorite books, it's always hard to say a favorite book when you've read hundreds, but one of my favorite books is The Top Five Regrets of the Dying. If you've read that by the hospice nurse, it's an excellent book. And she says the fifth regret is people say on the deathbed, I wish I let myself be happier. Like, what are we waiting for? I mean, it's not going to be easier tomorrow. Yeah. There's not going to be a magical point in the future. So if I look back and I go, gosh, I shouldn't worry so much. You know, why was I so anxious? Why was I so hard on myself and others? That's not how we regret proof our lives. And so I always think, look, maybe I'm going through something. And I think we all are at any particular time, small things, big things. How can I still have a good daily experience, even in small moments? Because a happy life is just a string of happy moments, really. And that's enough. Yeah. And I think that when we put pressure on ourselves, have this like gorgeous, perfect everything, then not only is it unrealistic, but we're miserable in the pursuit of it.
Yeah. Are there any things that you do to like remind yourself of like, enjoy it? Or like if you find yourself in moments where you're like in serious, you know, Susie, and you're like you're not having this fun part. Like, are there any things that you do to be like, to just remind yourself like, hey, you just got to enjoy it?
Well, I think that our bodies are so clever because when we have like these somatic symptoms, right? So we start to feel like a tightness, or we have like racing thoughts, or we start to even just feel like we get like a stress headache. People respond differently to what's going on outside of them. But I think, gosh, the body is so amazing because it gives us this real-time feedback loop in any moment that we need to change how we're thinking. So I think if I'm really stressed out, like if I feel really tense or I'm nervous about something, I'm like, what am I believing in this moment about my future or about what's happening like right now? And if I question it lovingly, right, I don't want to judge myself on top of everything. But I think if I look at what thoughts I'm having, like people don't like me, I'm messing this up, I'm not good enough, this is terrible, whatever those thoughts are, I just have to create a bit of space by just simply observing them, like looking at them and questioning their truth. Like Wayne Dyer said in one of his many books that there is no stress in this world. There are only stressful thoughts. And that just really hit, like that really landed with me. And I was like, wow, well, that's very good news then, right? Because a thought can be changed, right? That's really up to me. And it won't stop unwanted things from happening. Like that's guaranteed. Like that's for sure in your life. There'll be grief. There'll be loss. There'll be people will betray you. Like these things will happen. What am I making this situation mean is always the question that I come back to. Even on social media, if you're triggered by something or you go, oh my God, I'm jealous of that person. If you go, okay, so say some person is on some gorgeous vacation or is going out with your ex-boyfriend, or I don't know, whatever it is. Yeah. You can go, what am I making this mean? Does it mean that I'm a loser? Does it mean that I'm not good enough?
Question.
I don't know. What else could be true instead?
I like that. What am I making this mean?
What am I making this mean? This is the question that relieves all suffering for me. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's beautiful because you ask that. It gives you the deeper reasoning behind why you're feeling what you're feeling.
Yes, beautiful. And humans are meaning. Humans are meaning making machines, right? The way that we interpret the world is always through like what it means to us, what this meal means to us, what this job means to us, like what this conversation means to us. So when I'm suffering, I'll say, and even temporarily, I'll go, well, maybe the meaning that I'm attaching to this could be, I say, upgraded, or simply made more true.
Yeah, love it. So beautiful moment for all our listeners as well to ask themselves that question at least once today, right? If you're having a stressful thought, if you're not in this joyful, life like you're living.
Yeah, which you won't be all the time, yes, but yeah.
Yeah, just a simple reminder, ask yourself today, what am I making this mean? I think it's such a beautiful question. So if we go back into your life, again, you're, I think it was early 30s, you're director of sales in the Silicon Valley, you're making 500 grand a year, roughly, right? Yep. You've created a good life for yourself, very good life.
Yes.
But there's something inside of you that's going, this is a good life, but this isn't quite like what I know I'm here for. And I'm curious if you could take us through this part of your life where you start to kind of flip the page.
I think a few things started happening. I mean, I think that around when new decades hit us, we kind of get a bit more contemplative. In my experience, this is what happens. Yeah. And I remember I was approaching 30 and I looked at my bosses. I definitely didn't want their jobs. I didn't want to move up going from a sales director to a VP, in my opinion, it was just a lot more headaches, managing a lot more people. And then that being the job versus actually selling, which I enjoyed. But I remember thinking, I definitely don't want any of their roles at all. And I remember thinking, if I'm so obsessed with self-help and all of my conversations with my friends are about, helping them work through their problems. And if I could just, consume personal development material 24/7 for the rest of my life, I would be in a state of bliss. Then I'm like, well, surely this means something, right? It's not an accident. It's not like, oh, well, that's a hobby. And I remember kind of purposefully observing people who are writing self-help books, not too different in age from me, people who had various different, life experiences. And I think that when we focus on what is possible by studying success stories of people who do what it is that we want to do, whether it's career or run a marathon, whatever, we start to really think, gosh, they're a human being, I'm a human being. That means that it's possible.
Yeah.
Right. That means that the possibility is there. So, of course, I was so appreciative of my job. I had loads of perks, expense account. I mean, I had lots and lots of benefits and I had so much fun, but it just started to feel boring and there wasn't really anywhere to go. So at that kind of crossroads, it felt like I just knew that if anything were going to change, that it would have to be driven by me. No one's going to come to my door and knock and go, hey, I believe some incredible potential author lives here. Come this, I just knew that I had to just start taking small steps. So I went to NYU. I didn't finish, but I started studying there, some life coaching classes. I started getting media coverage by just creating advice-based articles based on my own personal stories. And then people started finding me. Right. And this is what I love about life. The more willing you are, right, the more you show up, the more you put your hat in the ring, right? You're present, you're there for it. Things just it's like the universe meets you halfway.
Yeah.
And so I would just say, hey, you know, join my email list. And then I've got spots open. And that became bigger and bigger. And actually, there was one time, Stu, it was a defining moment. When you have a corporate job, right, you have these all hands meetings, right? You have a lot of these meetings, right? And I remember I was meant to interview Lena Dunham, who was also very, very big at the time because of the Girls, the show Girls and its success. Her book was coming out, and I was set to interview her for Marie Claire. Like, that's how much I was enjoying it and thriving as someone who's creating media content. And I couldn't do it. She had a very tight schedule because of her book promotion. And I couldn't do it because my boss at the time called an all hands meeting. And I was like, this is the moment. Something's got to give. I cannot believe I'm giving up this interview with this incredible woman because I've got to just look at a sales report that I already am familiar with. Like, I'm good for this quarter, you know? So sometimes I think that we're made to be a little bit uncomfortable, and sometimes like these impossible things happen so that we have to make a decision. And I remember too, having a vacation around the time that, before I resigned, because I actually resigned sooner than I initially planned, like 3 months sooner. I was waiting for one more commission check. I remember I was on vacation and they sent me my commission report and it looked good. But when I came back to the office, my account manager said, oh, this big deal got pulled. Like it was just some tech for some feature that we couldn't support. And I remember going, I'm not even going to get that commission check. I quit. And like really in a moment of perfect clarity, that was it. And I'm like, you know what? The very worst thing that can happen is that I'll end up exactly where I am. I'm already living my worst case scenario. Like I can quit this job, give my business a full swing of the bat, give my side hustle as a life coach a full swing of the bat for 1 year. If I don't like it, if I don't make any money, if I fail, I'll just end up at another company with the same title, different business card, different logo. So I'm already living my worst case scenario. So why wouldn't I just like give it a test, like give it a go? And it's funny, right? When I think so many of us are actually living our worst case scenario without even realizing it. And thinking, you know, how serious is it really to give yourself some time and give yourself an opportunity?
So when you left and you made the leap, had you supplemented your income with your side hustle? Was it very different? Like what was that part of that?
Well, it was terrifying in the beginning because I was used to something very, very steady. And so I just knew I had to take it up a notch, right? But then, of course, I had the space. I had the time. Like having a corporate job, it has its limitations, right? Naturally. Right. But I was already making money on the side as a coach. And I'm like, okay, well, this is it. I spoke to my husband. Like we created a plan. I even did some consulting in the beginning to kind of ease my transition. Yeah. See, there are so many options once you kind of like really commit to something. I feel that when you get serious, magic happens. Right. When you're dancing in like maybe, magic can't happen. But when you're serious, when you commit, when you make the decision, ideas come. You've realized your options. You can evaluate them really plainly. And I remember thinking, gosh, I feel like so responsible. I don't know if this is a good idea. And like I had all these like really, really scary, scary thoughts and feelings, which then I had to examine. Right, doing the work that I do now. And I understand that transition. I know it's maybe not the most breezy one, but I think that anything, I mean, the path of any place worth going, right? It's it takes some time to get used to it. And there are some bumps in the road, but I mean, that was nearly 10 years ago now.
Crazy. And for you, what would you say are, like, if you had to boil it down to three principles or three things that you would always go back to that served you to really make this transition smoothly and get to where you are today? Like, what are a few of the principles that you lived by as you made that transition?
You have to manage your own mind. So every day you can be in torment, freaking out, or you can be in this place of creativity. So everyone's day looks a bit different, but if you, whatever it takes for you to feel regulated and in a good mood, you want to do that first thing, like whatever it is, because that's the most important decision you can make to like prime yourself for a good day. And you don't have to meditate. You don't have to work out. Like everyone's like kind of different. I like to just sit and visualize while I'm still in bed what a great day would be. But priming yourself for a good day is critical, or you can just have a string of bad days without doing that, completely unwillingly and even unknowingly. So putting yourself on purpose in the best mood you can that day. And that's going to vary day to day.
Yeah.
Secondly, I would think okay, if whatever your goal is, right, just say you have a goal of, I don't know, say it's six figures, to make six figures in a year.
Yeah.
If say that's your goal in your first year of business, I love to think if I only had 1 month to do that, like my life depended on it, or like my dog's life depended on it, or my mom's life, like whatever, what would I be doing? Like what steps would I take today? Yeah. Like allow that to open up your way of thinking, because when we've got a lot of time, it's one thing, but we get really creative. If I'm like, gosh, if my life depended on me making six figures in 1 month, you start thinking like, gosh, what, these ideas come to you that you couldn't possibly have unless you're thinking in that realm, you know?
For sure.
And then for me, absolutely media coverage. That's, it's still my favorite go-to to grow my business, to build awareness, to grow my email list, to sell stuff. It's just so reliable and available. So I would say those three things can absolutely get you on track quickly.
Love it. And if we dive into, let's say, media coverage, because obviously this is something you've done so beautifully, right? Such a master at this. What would be like one or two things somebody could do if they said, okay, I'm taking this step. I know that like having attention and eyeballs on me is a key piece of growing any business. So how does somebody start to take steps where they do get more media coverage?
Well, I would say the first piece is knowing that you're worthy of it, because I find that so much of my media coaching is life coaching, actually. People going, I don't know, I have nothing to say, I have nothing original or profound to share. And that's not true. I mean, what's obvious, this is a quote from Derek Sivers, the author, he says, what's obvious to you is amazing to others. So if you can help people create amazing vegan meals, or you can help women dress for success on a budget, or if you can help toddlers with autism, whatever your area of expertise are, people need what it is that you have. And it's up to us to be generous and to show up by sharing what it is that we have with others. And the media can give you access to so many more people than you could ever achieve on your own, frankly. Yeah. Like media outlets, they've been, well, some of them have been around for over 100 years, hundreds of million dollars that have been built into creating them. And you get to tap into their audiences with one media feature. So why wouldn't you? And so I start by knowing that we're worthy of it. Like if you want it, I've never met anyone yet, Stu, who wants media coverage, who doesn't have a potential 100 to 200 different media features within them. Never in my life, not yet, at least.
Wow.
And secondly, I'd spend some time consuming it. Like what online outlets do you love? Are there magazines? Are there TV shows that you enjoy watching? Like spend some time, like maybe you love Refinery 29 or Men's Health or GQ or Healthline or Wall Street Journal. Like what media brands do you naturally like? Spend some time consuming them. Like you get ideas just by paying attention. Yeah. And then think maybe what are two or three things that have been most helpful for your clients or for you in your own experience that could potentially help others. And it doesn't have to be really original nor profound. It's just what's true for you. We don't need to create this perfect piece that no one's seen before or anything wildly fresh, but it just has to be helpful or informative or entertaining. That's enough.
Gotcha. And then it's just reaching out to them with your story.
Essentially, I mean, there are a few different steps based on your type of media and type of medium that works for you. But yes, I mean, essentially, and to go wide, I mean, I think that a lot of the time people don't realize that success is based on volume, right? We think, oh, I put myself forward. Someone said to me recently, I'm putting myself forward for all these podcasts and no one said yes. My first question is, how many? She said one.
Oh, no.
I'm like, so this is a thought examination. I'm putting myself forward for all these opportunities and nothing's working. Okay, so let's just look at the truth. First step. If she said 50, then I would say, okay, well, what are you saying? Right, then let's look at what you should, you know, then we can do some work. But I think we give up too soon a lot of the time, and we think that, you know, one or two rejections or being met with silence once or twice mean something. Again, what am I making it mean? It means nothing, no thing. Yeah. So being able to come back to that truth, the reality of it too, will always be your friend. Like anything that anyone does well, they do a lot. Right.
Yeah.
So I think allowing that to also be, allowing that to also just be like the foundation of your action, knowing that you're going to take probably quite a lot of action, that's soothing because you're also unattached to any particular outcome.
Love it. So cool. So I want to change it up a little bit, but dive into a quote that I got on your website, and I thought it was you just said it beautifully, and I would love to learn more about it. But what you said on your website is, you said, what's the difference between a life that feels like a night before vacation, cheery, carefree, and full of bubbly anticipation for all the goodness ahead, and one that's more like a gray Tuesday morning when your alarm cuts through the stillness and your first thought is a stressful one? I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about this.
Oh, it's so, isn't it such a beautiful thing that the way that we feel, how we interpret the world, the feelings that we generate within us are entirely up to us. Like most of us are living reactively, right? Like, I didn't get that thing that I wanted, so I'm sad. Or this thing is working out and I'm really happy. I mean, those things also happen, of course, right? We're humans. Yeah. But if we live our life based on reactions all the time, I feel like I'm walking around in a sensitivity bubble that could be burst in any moment, right? Someone can give me some bad news, or someone could let me down, and then that's it. I guess I'm going to have a miserable 3 days. Like, that's not good enough. Like, that is not good enough for my life. And I think people don't realize we create our own emotions, right? We decide. I always say my superpower is I get to decide how I feel. Isn't that beautiful. Miraculous? Because if my thoughts determine how I feel, we know this from like CBT, right? Cognitive behavioral therapy. If my thoughts determine how I feel and my thoughts are my decision, I'm like one thought upgrade away from feeling better, then that is my only job. Everything else after that is easier. And this is why I love coaching so much, observing it, doing it, reading about it, like paying attention to it. Because you see, often we'll say even on our calls, like, if we're going from feeling maybe frustrated or helpless to feeling more powerful and more eager to take some action, I'm like, what changed in the outside world in order for that to shift within you? And it's always nothing, because we're still sitting on the same Zoom. No one's arrived into your home, or a block of gold hasn't landed on your lap. Like, it's still you in the same chair, in the same room, on the same day, but your energy has completely shifted. Because you're making things mean something maybe more true. And I always find that the truth always makes me feel better. So whenever I'm feeling sucky or heavy or low, and you have to allow those moods too, because you know life has cycles. It can't always be summer. Yeah. So also good to allow low moods when they come, if that feels right for you. But I always think, it's really going to be up to me to get out of this, or it's going to be up to me to see this in a fresh way. And that's really the difference, right? We're either tapping into that, or we're more, frankly, just a bit more passive and waiting for something good to happen in order for us to feel better, like a vacation. And you don't need a vacation to feel good.
Yeah, I love it. And it seems like a powerful tool to help with that, again, is this question you've brought up, right? What am I making that mean?
Yes. So even this happened to me recently. There was something I was hoping would, there'd be like a sign off on something on a contract, and it didn't happen. And so that could be spiral, right? Like, I'm not good enough. What happened? What was missing? Did I mess up? You can easily go there, right? But now I'm like, okay, so, well, what else is cooking? Like, what else is going on? Right. You know, and well, maybe actually the timing is better to do this later in the year, in fact. Like, maybe actually this is working out for me because I've got more space for this other thing that is actually really important and exciting. So having, I think, a bit of a general trust. And when you look back in your life, you'll realize that the things that were, or some of the things that were disastrous or just felt awful, like maybe missing out on an apartment or not getting the job or being dumped, like whatever it is, like with some hindsight, you're like, oh, I'm really glad that that happened. So we all have a history with the universe. So I also just use my own history as proof that I'm also kind of being protected and guided as I go. And it's not up to me to figure it all out.
Heck yeah. So one, you know, sort of last thing I would love to dive in with you on is this idea of confidence. It's something that you talk about a lot. It served you a lot in your life. And I'm curious, just, if we look at it first and foremost, like, what do you think is the importance of confidence when it comes to somebody's life and in creating a life that they enjoy?
So in my opinion, confidence is really the most important thing, because it underpins every area of your life. It's not And it really supports every other virtue that you have. So whatever it is that you want to be, do, or have in your life, a confident person almost wins before they even begin, because they believe it's possible. They take action in the direction of that goal. And the way that I define confidence is a little different, right? People think that it's often being good at things or having talents or being like really outspoken.
Yeah.
And the way that I define it is good news, because anyone can do it. And it's simply a willingness to be uncomfortable. And a lot of people, they would rather like jump off a moving train than be uncomfortable in a conversation, or be uncomfortable in a negotiation, right? Or be uncomfortable on stage. But I think if I'm willing to be uncomfortable, if I'm willing to have someone say no, if I'm willing to get shut down, if I'm willing to be bad at something new, then what doesn't belong to me, like potentially? I would bet any money on the person who's willing to be uncomfortable consistently.
Yeah.
And I think that we hold ourselves back so much because we have this story, this meaning that if we're bad at something, or if someone says no, or if we make a mistake, that it has some significance. And maybe it doesn't. Maybe it has zero significance, actually. And instead of being talented or perfect or having life figured out, those things aren't always going to be available, right? But anyone can decide to be willing to be uncomfortable. So if you're like, yeah, this is scary and I'm doing it, and or I really don't feel ready, but yep, I'm showing up, like I'll be there at 10 o'clock, yep, then that's available. And we know in coaching too, the confidence competence loop. So the more confident you are, the more action you take, the more confident you become, also the more skilled. I think it's a gorgeous cycle. And I frankly feel that unless I'm uncomfortable almost all of the time, then probably I'm coasting a little bit. So discomfort is good. It's required if you're stretching, and just like physically, right? If you're stretching yourself, there's going to be some discomfort in your experience. Then that's also true for how we live our lives and the actions that we take.
I love it. So the best way then for somebody to jump into this confident loop would be jumping into discomfort, it sounds like, because that's going to get you uncomfortable. It's going to get you more confidence. You're going to take more action, and you kind of just have to throw yourself into discomfort to go into that loop.
Well, I would say, like, if I were wildly comfortable and felt safe and felt really certain of a particular outcome, like, what would I do next? You know, if I just felt like it were written in a contract somewhere, say, that I'm absolutely going to succeed at this thing, like, what would be that step that I would take? Like, would it be, like, I'd write a book, or I'd quit my job, or I'd do van life for 6 months, like, whatever it is. I'd go, okay, so what would be the thing that would call you forward? And does it feel uncomfortable? Great. That's really good information. That's probably saying, come this way.
Yeah.
Come this way. And by the way, we've all been uncomfortable in our lives and we're still here. Right? So no one knows how to drive. So no one knows what to do on their first day at work. No one knows what they're doing on their very first date. Right? But we've all been there before and we've survived. So I just think too, we're so quick to discount ourselves and how far we've already come and what we already know. But yeah, I think thinking, gosh, if I really felt very steady and certain of the outcome, what would be my next action? And then thinking what those actions or one action would be. And then if it feels uncomfortable, good, stick with it. Then that's your green light right there.
Heck yeah. What would you say are a few of the biggest misconceptions people have when it comes to confidence? Obviously, one being that it's not that you're the best at everything. It's just that you're willing to get uncomfortable. But would there be any other misconceptions you think people struggle with when it comes to creating confidence?
Yes, I think that some people think that confidence is loud, right? That there's a volume to it, or you know a confident person because they almost like announce themselves somehow, or you feel it. It can be quiet and subtle. And in fact, sometimes that's actually the most beautiful and the most authentic, because it's not a proving energy. It's like, it's just a knowing energy, like a quiet knowing of, you know, it's not here I am, right? It's like, well, this is me and I'm here and I may be uncomfortable, but here I am imperfectly, right? Without being polished or looking a certain way or sounding a certain way. So I think people think that confidence is loud. It absolutely isn't, or it could be, but it doesn't have to be.
Right.
And then I think that some people think that confidence is earned through winning. And it's true, right? The more we act, the more confident we become. And naturally, what scared you a year ago probably doesn't scare you now if you've been doing it consistently. But instead of thinking, gosh, I've got such a long road ahead in order to feel comfortable, if you just think, you know, one action at a time, like one day at a time, one small like step forward at a time, that's enough to really put you in this foundational place of trusting yourself. And in fact, the word confidence has a Latin origin, confida, the word confida meaning to trust. So if I think, I'm not sure I can do this, you know, I may mess up, I may look stupid, but I can take a small step and trust that whatever happens, I can handle that. Like I can experience a temporary negative emotion. And it's proven too that emotions last 90 seconds. I think, is 90 seconds of discomfort worth everything that I've ever wanted?
Absolutely.
My friend, like, so most things, it's like this big thing that we have to conquer and to sound like her or like do it as well as he does. But I think, I don't know, like bit by bit, like being uncomfortable bit by bit, like we get there and that's it. That's all we can ever do. So I think it doesn't have to feel overwhelming and it doesn't have to feel like it's unattainable. It's like small, consistent actions that get you there.
Heck yeah. Amazing. Well, Susie, you're amazing. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Stu. Right back at you. What a great conversation.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being a great human. You make it, you know, very, very easy. And so I'm curious, you know, for our listener, if they're going, man, I need more Susie in my life. I want to hang out with her. I want to be best friends with her. where's the best place for them to go to hang out more with you and just to kind of dive into your world?
I would say, you know, as podcast listeners, to check out my podcast, Let It Be Easy with Susie Moore. I drop episodes for 5 minutes every single day to keep people on track because experience shows, right? Consistency matters. So I would recommend just starting there. And I share a lot of stuff that's coming up on the podcast too.
Okay, perfect. All right. And then my last question for you, a question we ask all of our listeners, because we want to help people find direction, but do it through action, is what would you say is one thing our listener could do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start finding direction in their life?
I would ask yourself that question. Like if I knew that it was going to work out, it was already in a contract, like truly somewhere in the sky, right? If I knew that the next step of my life was going to work out, what would I do today? Take an action within the next 24 hours and literally like, put a timer on your phone, 24 hours. So if it's 2 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, take an action in that direction, especially if it makes you feel uncomfortable.
Let's go. Heck yeah. Well, Susie, thank you so much again for being here. Thank you for your wisdom. We are massively grateful for it. And everybody, make sure you go check out Susie and hang out with her some more. So Susie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Stu. Mwah!
Congratulations, my friend, on crushing it through another episode here on Finding Direction. Make sure you give yourself a pat on the back, a round of applause, because you are one of the few who is not willing to settle for less than a life that lights up your soul, and that is absolutely something worth celebrating. I hope you got some nuggets from Susie. More importantly, as always, I hope you take some of those nuggets and start to apply them, whether it's asking yourself that question, whether it's looking at that signed contract she talked about at the end and what you could do with it in your life, what the next action you could take from that is. Regardless of what it is, I hope you take something from today's episode to increase the quality of your happiness and just the joy that you have in your life every single day. And as always, I want to say thank you for joining me on this episode. Thanks for joining me on this podcast. And if you have not, make sure you hit that subscribe button right now so you can join us every single week for more content, insights, and conversations to help you live a life full of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. All right, my friend, I will see you next time. Have a wonderful, beautiful, outstanding rest of your day.